Recording and good evening, Rabbi Lou. Thank
good
you.
Evening. And good evening. I see a lot of nice names here. Good evening, everybody.
And we're just going to share the screen.
Hi, Alex.
Right. Are you able to see that?
Not yet.
Right. Okay. I think now you can. Yes. So now this is a section after the giving of the Ten Commandments. In this week's Seder, we have the giving of the Ten Commandments. It's an amazing event. And when they're read in the synagogue, everyone stands up. And it's something very profound. And then we have the aftermath of the giving of the Ten Commandments. And it says, the whole people could see the thunder, the et halapidim and the flames. Now, it's an interesting idea. They could see the thunder. The sages comment on that. There's a fascinating talk by the Rebbe about that. The et kol ha-shofar and the sound of the shofar, the et ha-ashen and the mountain, Mount Sinai, smoking, belching smoke. Vayar ha'am, and the people saw vayanu, and they were moved. It was extremely striking to them. Vayamdu merachok, and they stood at a distance. Now this is going to be an important thing. They moved back. They stood at a distance. Vayomru el Moshe, they said to Moses, Daber ata imanu v'nishma'a, you speak with us, and we'll listen to you. Don't let God himself speak to us. It's too intense. Pen namut, in case we die. Moses said to the people, Al tira, don't be afraid. It's in order to test you. And that's an interesting concept, which could be seen as to refine you. Ba'elekim, that's why God has come in this intense way. And so that the awe of God should be on your faces. Levilti techentau, so you should not sin. V'yamod ha'am merachok, and the people stood at a distance, from afar. U'moshe nigash el ha'arafel, and Moses went to the thick cloud, Asher Sham Elokim, and there in that cloud is where God was. Using the word Elokim for God. Sorry, one second. Now, this last verse is the catchphrase of the discourse that we're going to be looking at, exploring together. Bezrat Hashem, and it was originally said in 1965 on Shabbat Parshat Yitro, and so let's try to explore it together. One second. Sorry. did that come over okay?
Yeah, fine.
Lovely, okay. So here we have the text of the discourse. Moshe nigash el arafel, Moses came close or into the thick cloud, asher sham ha'elokim, where God was. So the idea is he's going up Mount Sinai. So he's been with the Jewish people. They heard the Ten Commandments. And then Moses is with the people. Then he steps away from the people. The people are standing at a distance from the mountain now. But Moses then comes close to the mountain where there's this dark, thick cloud and where the divine is hidden. And he goes up the mountain. Uperish Rashi, now Rashi explains on that verse. He went lifnim mishalosh mechitzot. He went beyond three barriers. And the barriers are called choshech, darkness, anan, cloud, va'arafel, and thick cloud. Right? So we've got this idea that he's going into a deeper and deeper place. And Rashi quotes, Shenem, as it says, Vaha'a bo'e bo'esh, the mountain was burning with fire, ad lev ha'shamayim, to the heart of the heavens, choshech anan va'arafel, darkness, cloud, and thick darkness. And Rashi then explains, arafel, what does arafel mean? Av he'anan, the thickness of the cloud. So there we have this statement in Rashi. Now, every word of Rashi is significant and it's got very...
Tali, somebody's asking if you can enlarge the text a bit.
Thank you. Is that better?
Very good.
So, every word of Rashi is significant. And now, Umevi HaTzemach Tzedek. Now, the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel, who lived around 1850, he quotes Bahagotav Lemamar Admu HaZaken. There's a discourse by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, by his grandfather, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad. And the discourse begins with this verse. And the Rebbe mentions that it hasn't yet been printed. Hopefully it will be printed. I think by now it has been. And it quotes there what the Tzemach Tzedek writes, is that in an interesting Kabbalistic sefer, in an interesting Kabbalistic book, Shubha Sefer Emek HaMelech, in the book Emek HaMelech, the Valley of the King, Katav, it writes, the Emek HaMelech is by someone called Rabbi Naftali Bachrach. And I believe it was printed in Frankfurt, which is interesting to me because my family came from Frankfurt at that time. So in the book Emek HaMelech, Katav, he writes, Sha'arafel, that this thick cloud, Shuhu Choshech, Yoteh Mechoshech Stam. It's darkness which is more than normal darkness. As Rashi said, it's the thickness of the cloud. Hu olam ha'asiyah. That is the world of action. Now we know that there are the worlds of the Kabbalah, the four worlds of the Kabbalah. The world of action is the lowest world, closest to this physical world that we inhabit. And then there's the world of formation, Yetzirah, and then the world of creation, Bria, and then a higher level is the world of Atzilut, of emanation, which is on a different level, a much higher spiritual level. And then comes higher and higher levels, reaching to Ein Sof, to the radiance of the infinite, to the oneness of the infinite, beyond all existence. So what this Kabbalist in Emek HaMelech, in the book, The Valley of the King by Naftali Bachrach, what he writes is, that when it says Arafel, the thick cloud that Moses went into, that is the world of action. And the Rebbe comments, so one can suggest then that we've got these three terms. Rashi quoted three terms, darkness, cloud, and thick cloud. They are the three worlds, creation, formation, and action. So that means that the world of creation is called Choshech, darkness. As it says, Bore Choshech, God creates darkness. We say in our morning prayers from a verse from Isaiah. And the world of Yetzirah, the world of formation, is called cloud. And the world of action is called Arafel, is called the thick cloud. So when it says Moshe came into this thick cloud, it means that he was coming, it means it begins off in this world. It's as if he's going up a ladder, so to speak. He's going up a ladder to higher and higher levels. And the bottom of the ladder is here in this world. And that's what it means, Arafel, this thick cloud, which is Olam Hazeh. It's this world here, the world we're in. Asher Sham Elokim. And when it says that God was there using the word Elohim, it means Sh'olam ha'asiyah, the world of action, na'asa b'sod Elohim, is made with the secret of Elohim, godliness. That's a further quote from the Emek HaMelech. And about this, the Tzemach Tzedek quotes, or states, he writes, Shema shekatav she'arafel, the fact he wrote that Arafel, the thick cloud, is the world of action. Therefore, the thickness of the cloud is something negative in a sense. It's implying that this is a thick cloud, indicating the concealment of the divine and the way it's at a very low level. And that's why it's Elohim, which is like the concealment of godliness in this world. So this interpretation seems to be emphasizing that the thick cloud that Moses went into, it's like the bottom of a ladder, and he's going to be trying to climb higher on Mount Sinai, presumably. But is that really the right interpretation? And the Tzemach Tzedek criticizes this. He says, Lo mashma kein. It doesn't, there is a different verse, seems to imply a different way of understanding these words. And what is that other verse? Hashem amar, Lishkon ba'arafel. God said he would dwell in the thick darkness. Now that's a verse that King Solomon said when he was inaugurating the temple. And at the temple, there was also a kind of cloud around the temple or in the temple. And King Solomon said, God said that he would dwell in this thick darkness, using this same word, Arafel. And so there, it seems to be a very positive thing. It's not saying this is the darkness of this world. You see, the way in which the Emek HaMelech, the Valley of the King, this Kabbalistic book, the way it seems to be presenting it is that the thick darkness is the thick, concealing, disturbing darkness of the world that we live in. But here we have another interpretation of the same word, Arafel, that it doesn't mean it is indeed thick darkness, but it's thick darkness because of the infinity of the divine and the ultimate levels, higher and higher levels of the divine cannot be revealed through radiance, because radiance won't hold the infinite greatness of the divine. It is only darkness which is able to express it. So the other way of understanding this term is not that it's at the very bottom of the ladder, so to speak, but it's something very high. It's a very exalted level. And it also is a level which is of which the term used is arafel, the thick darkness. So the Tzemach Tzedek then quotes a passage from the Talmud, a rather mystical passage from the Talmud in tractate Chagigah. The second chapter of Chagigah is a very mystical section of the Talmud. And it's here speaking about different levels of heaven. And one level is called Aravot. And then it speaks about higher and higher levels. And then it says, we're going to skip that to the last penultimate line on the page, line 24. V'choshech v'anan v'arafel. The darkness, the thick, the cloud, and the thick cloud, right? These three terms that Rashi quoted and that we are exploring, these three terms, darkness, cloud, and thick cloud, surround, makifin oto. They surround the divine at a very exalted level. There's the throne of glory of the eternal living God, who is exalted, and the thick cloud surrounds him. Shenema, as it says, Yashet Choshech Sitcho. He makes darkness his hiding place all around him. So then in the Talmud, there's a discussion about this. Uparich, there's a question asked in the Talmud. Umi ikach hashocha kama shemaya. How can you say that there's darkness in heaven? We're talking about a very exalted level of heaven, where the divine is on a very exalted level of revelation. How can you say it's dark? V'hoksiv, doesn't it say in another verse, Hu galeya mikata, he reveals its depths, unahora imeshre, and radiance dwells with him. Now, this is a very fascinating verse, incidentally, because the Kabbalists love talking about the radiance of the divine. And this is one place in the Tanakh, in the Bible, in the book of Daniel, where it speaks about radiance and the divine. Normally it speaks about the divine creating the world or speaking or doing something. And here it speaks about the radiance with the divine. So on that level itself, that's an interesting verse. But the Talmud is quoting this verse about radiance with the divine to contradict the statement that it's just quoted in the Talmud of the darkness. Umashane, and it gives an explanation. Lo kasha, no, it's not a problem. Ha babate gavai, when you're at the inner level, is one thing, and when you're at the outer level is another thing. So in other words, one can ascend to the highest level of revelation of the divine, and there is an outer level and an inner level. Rashi explains that the inner level means that's where there's light, whereas the outer level, that's where there's darkness. But it's talking about a very, very exalted level. So it's true, the ultimate is radiance, infinite, boundless radiance. But the first step beyond that, towards the world, so to speak, is darkness. And that darkness, the Tzemach Tzedek explains, this is all in these notes he's added to a discourse by Rabbi Schneur Zalman, that the idea of the darkness in the outside chamber, so to speak, is talking about keter, that sphera, that level, which is actually in a sense beyond the sphera and relating to the infinite divine, and that's called Keter, Shenikra Yashet Hoshech Sitro. And that is called, he makes darkness his hiding place. Kikitra ila, because even the very highest level of Keter, the upper Keter, Ukmahu legabe oinso. Even though Keter is really a kind of very profound, intense radiance, but when it's compared with the radiance of the infinite, it's dark. And so this is a special kind of darkness. This is a darkness, a kind of comparative darkness. It's dark because it's in relation to the radiance of the Ein Sof, of the infinite. And so there we have this expression of these different levels. So now we're coming back to those three words, Choshech, darkness, Anan, cloud, and Arafel, and the thick cloud. And so the Tzemach Tzedek now explains them. The Choshech, the darkness, means Keter. The cloud means Chochmah, the wisdom. And the Arafel, the thick cloud, is Bina, understanding. Now, so therefore, when it says Moshe Nigash Ela Arafel, that Moses entered the thick cloud, that means it's a kind of a Kabbalistic movement. Hu Inyan Aliyat HaTiferet. It's the quality of Moses, which is Tiferet. Now, Tiferet is the central sphera. There's kindness, severity, and then Tiferet, which is splendor, sometimes called mercy. And that's the quality of Moses. Moses is also linked with wisdom, but at this point we're looking at him as he represents this central point in the Sfirot, and that enters Bina, the quality of understanding, the higher sphere of understanding, which is the Arafel, the darkness. And then we have a crucial statement, Umashe Katuv, and the fact that it says, Asher Sham Elokim, which is where God is, which it said in the verse, Moses went into the thick darkness where God is. Hainu lefi shehit galut atik. That's because the revelation of atik, which is the inwardness of Keter, hu babina, is in bina, in understanding. So that's two ways of understanding these three words of darkness, cloud, and thick cloud. And the fact that the Torah tells us that Moses entered the thick cloud, we can either see that the way this Kabbalist wrote about it, Naftali Bachrach in Emek HaMelech, that he wrote about it, that the thick cloud is like the bottom of the ladder, and he's going into this thick cloud, and the cloud is because of the hiddenness of God in this physical world which we inhabit, which is full of so many tragic problems because of the hiddenness of God. Or we can look at it the way that Tzemach Tzedek has explained it, that it's the other way. In fact, this is a very exalted level, and it's there's Keter and Chochmah and Bina. But in Bina is something even higher, the Elohim, the revelation of the divine from the very highest level. And so that's a completely different way of understanding what Moses is doing at that moment at Mount Sinai. So I'm going to stop sharing for a moment, just to see that everyone is on board with this absolutely fascinating discourse, that we're talking about two ways of understanding what Moses is doing, that on the one hand, he's in the thick darkness of this world, and the other way of explaining it is that he is entering a very, very exalted level of the divine, which is also called the thick darkness, but it's a very exalted level of the divine. So that is, if we go back to what it's saying in the verse in the Torah, those are two different ways of understanding that verse and what is taking place. Now, the discourse is going to launch us into further dimensions of this. But first, I want to try to see if we together are able to actually follow what is happening so far. So are we with the what's happening so far, Gloria? Very nice seeing you. And
thank you, Tali. Yes. Would this mean that if both of those aspects are true, the going up of Moses through the darkness and finding his way, would he actually find the light? Or is the idea that he has to accept that darkness because the essence of God cannot be visualized?
Well, that's a very beautiful question. And in a sense, I think what the discourse is leading us to and describing Moses is that it's in the thick darkness that the intensity of the radiance of the divine is to be found. That's how I understand it. Rabbi Lou, would you like to comment on that?
You're explaining it beautifully. I mean, I think it's the going down, being up, connected to each other. That's really, there are three levels. There's a level of a lower revelation, level of a higher revelation. Then there's a level of essence, which is higher than any revelation. And that essence has the power to be able to unite the higher and the lower revelations together. So in a sense, they're both right, Gloria. They're both happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tali.
Yeah. Any other comment from anyone else? Okay. All right. So let's get back into it, because now, you see, at this moment, we've got the people standing far off, and we've got Moses going forward to the mountain, and he's going into the thick cloud, and there's a whole discussion about what this thick cloud is. Is it the lowest level or is it the highest level? But it's Moses, right? Now we come to a very, very intriguing question that the Tzemach Tzedek brings in his discussion. So that's on line 13, on this page, which is page 15 of the discourse as we have it. Now, Umadayik b'mayim, and the Tzemach Tzedek asked the question, the Tzarich lahavin, we have to understand, ma shekatuv, the fact that it's written, Umoshe nigash el ha'arafel, Moses went to the thick cloud. Shemiyachid inyan zele Moshe dafka. It's connecting this whole idea just to Moses. Halo az, now here's the question of the Tzemach Tzedek. Surely, as b'matan Torah, at the giving of the Torah, haita hitgalut elokut gdola, there was a tremendous revelation of the divine, hitgalut ha'atzmut, the revelation of the essence, as Rabbi Lu just mentioned, the essence, l'chol Yisrael, to the whole Jewish people. So why is the verse seemingly just talking about Moses going into the thick cloud? What about everyone else? It's an amazing question. I cannot imagine anyone asking this question before the beginning of the Hasidic movement, because the Hasidic movement makes every individual Jew the absolute focus of everything. It's true, the groundwork is done in the Talmud before, in Sanhedrin, the Mishnah, states that each person has the duty to say, for my sake, the world was created, the whole universe is created for each individual. And nonetheless, to spell it out in this kind of way, that when we're looking at this very dramatic picture of Moses going into the thick cloud in order to climb Mount Sinai, and then asking, what about everyone else? Where are they? Aren't they supposed to also be involved? It's a fascinating question. Gam tzarich lahavin, we also have to understand, ma shekatuv asher sham Elokim, why it uses this name Elokim. There are many different names for God. For example, there's the name Yudke Vavke, the tetragrammaton. But why is it that the name Elokim, which is a word signifying limitation, severity, din, judgment, as opposed to the tetragrammaton, which represents mercy Elokim represents concealment and severity and judgment, whereas the name Yudke Vavke, the tetragrammaton, represents revelation of the divine. And that is the name representing the essence of the divine. Halo Bahasinai, surely at Mount Sinai, the sages tell us, God was revealed as someone filled with mercy, which would represent more the tetragrammaton. Now, so those are the questions that Tzemach Tzedek asks. And then he continues in his discourse. But first of all, Shetchila Tzarich Lahakdim Mahu Inyan de Matan Torah. What is the whole idea of the giving of the Torah? So in other words, it's through understanding what is the nature of the giving of the Torah that we will be able to understand how Moses and the rest of the Jewish people, including us, relate together to this whole concept of entering the darkness of the cloud at Mount Sinai and going up into that cloud. So in order to understand what is the significance of the giving of the Torah, now this is something asked many times in Hasidic teaching, because quite a number of us, when we study Rashi on the Torah, based on the Talmud and the Midrash, it's quite clear, and the simple text of the verse, but his analysis of it, it's quite clear that Ha'avot, the patriarchs, Kimu kol haTorah kodem shenitna. They kept the entire Torah before it was given. That's a famous rabbinic statement, which it's there in the Talmud in Yuma, the volume which deals with Yom Kippur. But it's an idea repeated many times. Now, if they kept the Torah before it was given, so what is the significance of the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai? Now the Tzemach Tzedek comments, Shema'alat Avraham haita gdola me'od, the exalted quality of Abraham was very great. Shehaita avodato, because his service was in a way of ratzo vashov, going upwards and coming back. Let's try to understand this. And it relates this to Abraham because it uses the phrase about him, haloch v'nasoa. Haloch v'nasoa is like moving and traveling. And the way it's explained in Hasidic or Kabbalistic texts is that it is this movement going up and coming back, going up and coming back. Now, this concept comes originally, I'm going to stop sharing for a moment while discussing this. This concept comes originally from the book of Ezekiel. And in the first chapter of Ezekiel, there's a very, very intense, amazing vision, which is described by Ezekiel, Yechezkel. And that vision includes the idea of angels with four faces, of a man, a lion, an eagle, and an ox. And and wheels covered with eyes. It's an incredible image of the divine supervision of the world. And it speaks about these angels coming forward, going forward towards the divine and coming back. This is often translated as ebb and flow. If you've ever watched the water coming in, when the tide is coming in, as we have in our English beaches, I'm not sure what it's like exactly in Ra'anan or other places in Israel. But this, you can watch the tide coming in. It like it comes in a bit and then it goes back. Then it comes in a bit more and it goes back. And it comes in a bit more and gradually, gradually the tide is coming in. So it's this approach to the divine, coming closer to the divine. And each time it's coming closer and then going back, coming closer and then going back. And in this discourse, at this particular juncture, that is taken as a fundamental aspect in our relationship with the divine. It's like someone becoming a little bit more religious. And when that happens, you can't do everything at once. It has to be a little bit at a time. And sometimes, you know, there are things that you do occasionally, but then you fall back. And then you do something else extra occasionally, and then you fall back. But you have a baseline. You know, you're not going lower than that baseline, and the baseline slowly goes higher and higher. So it's the same with the tide coming in. The water's coming in and going back, coming in and going back, but it's actually creeping higher and higher and higher towards the shore. So that is a kind of, gives us an image of the whole nature of Torah. So, v'lechein nitna lo ha-Torah. That's why the Torah was given, was revealed to Abraham, because he was serving the divine in this kind of way of coming forward and going back. And the Torah is Resh Mem Chet Mitzvot Haseh, 248 positive commandments and 365 negative commandments. And the positive is like the movement towards the divine, and the negative is like the step back. And so that is one way of understanding what the whole relationship of Abraham was to the Torah. And so this is one opinion, that Abraham, he had this quality of moving forward and coming back because of the root of his soul. B'chol Adam and everyone else, every other Jew, can reach this quality of coming forward, going, reaching forward and coming back through the Torah. So that is one way of understanding what's special about the giving of the Torah. The giving of the Torah bequeaths to every single Jew the ability to move forward and back, forward and back, forward and back in their relationship with the divine. Love and awe, love and awe. It's as if one moves forward with love, but then because of one's awe, one steps back. And so the difference is the giving of the Torah gives what Abraham received to every single Jew. It's an incredible idea. Actually, chapter 47 in Tanya explains this idea, focuses on this concept, that what Abraham was able to achieve because of his own personal dedication to God through the giving of the Torah is then bequeathed to every individual Jew following that path. So that's one approach to understand what is the special quality about the giving of the Torah. Line 6. Vashitashniya, and a second approach. Shaham Shachot Davraham, the spiritual achievements that Abraham achieved, Hayu be'ikar be'olamot elyonim. They were in upper worlds. He achieved wonderful things, but they were in upper worlds. Uchdei liyot hamshachat or insof gam lemata. And in order to be able to draw the radiance of the infinite also below, that's what the giving of the Torah achieved. The giving of the Torah achieved that the radiance that Abraham was able to manifest through his dedication to the divine should not just be in spiritual realms above, it should flow down to this world. So the Rebbe comments, umuvan, it's understood. What it writes in the second way of understanding the giving of the Torah, einu sholel, it's not rejecting the first way of understanding it. Eilu mosif, it's adding what we understood from the first explanation of the significance that the giving of the Torah is added to by the second explanation. So that idea that every single Jew, after the giving of the Torah, is able to draw the radiance of God down below into our world as the second explanation. This is something which relates to each individual. As in the first explanation, what the difference between before the giving of the Torah and after is that before it was only Abraham and after that it's everyone. Now the Tzemach Tzedek adds another comment. And in that comment he says, Yesh Shita Shlishit, there's a third way of understanding what is special about the giving of the Torah. Similar to what we had a couple of centuries ago, where God said to Moses, I was seen by Abraham by my divine name, Aleph Lamed Shin Dalet Yud, like certain divine names. But my name, the Tetragrammaton, Yudke Vavke, I wasn't known to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by that name in the full sense of the word. Because that name, adds the Tzemach Tzedek, comes down only after the giving of the Torah through Torah mitzvah. So that means the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they drew down the level of chesed, gvura, tiferet, kindness, severity, and mercy. And that means the way the name Yudke Vavke, the tetragrammaton, the way that it is clothed, it's sheathed in the name of Elohim, like the sun, which is hidden by a sheath. But my name, Yudke Vavke, which is Shemesh Havaya, the sun, as it were, the bare sun, the brilliant light of the sun without any sheath, the radiance of the infinite, which is enclosed in Chochmah, in wisdom, which is called truth. And that should be revealed in such a way that everything before it is like nothing, like drawing the sun out beyond its sheath, that is revealed through the Torah. So that's a very powerful statement, that although the patriarchs were connecting with and revealing certain aspects of the divine, there's something incredibly powerful which gets revealed at the giving of the Torah in a very, very intense way.
And what does Torah mean here exactly? I mean, is it the idea that everything that everybody ever wrote was already there, or is it the Ten Commandments? I mean, is it because Hasidut does something quite different from just reading the Torah?
To understand that, Eve, there are quite a number of discourses which speak about the idea that before the giving of the Torah, there was a barrier between the spiritual and the physical. One was able to have access to the spiritual, but it was beyond the physical world. So it's as if the upper level and the lower level had a division, had a barrier in between. The giving of the Torah breaks through that barrier, deconstructs that barrier, if you like. And therefore the upper and the lower are able to be joined. And that's really what the Torah is about, because the Torah, the center of the Torah, as you say, it's the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments are the basis of all the 613 commandments. And all the commentaries explaining how they should or shouldn't be carried out, reaching to our own time. All that strain of teaching is linking our physical lives to the infinity of the divine. And so that is really what the brief moment of the giving of the Torah achieves. This union of the very highest with the most simple aspect of a person's life, practicalities like what they eat and things like that. Does that help?
Very much so. But then, so then if we go back to what you started off by saying with the different levels of darkness, then it would be different levels in that, in the light of the Torah, right? I mean, maybe, you know, one level would be this worldly level would be just, you know, the physical.
Well,
closer to the physical.
This is, well, if we take those two interpretations, one is that there's the lowest level of darkness, which is like this world. And then it's that it's actually the highest level, that the darkness represents a very exalted aspect of God. What it's saying is that in our life in this world, which is a physical life with often very great challenges of different kinds, in that life can be, and in our actions, our daily actions, morning till night and throughout the night as well, we are able to express this illumination of the infinite oneness of God, the essence which goes beyond light and dark.
Okay, I think we need to see it. You have to kind of move everything around in your head. But thank you. Yes, that's very helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Any other comments at this point?
Actually,
yeah.
The ebb and flow. I think it'd be very, easy to understand if one speaks about one step backward and two forward. It's like like the ants movement, I think that's.
But say that, yeah, okay, that's nice. Thank you. Thank you, Rivka. Now, then we have another way of defining what is the difference between the Torah of the patriarchs and the giving of the Torah, and this is from Hasidic teaching of the fourth and fifth Chabad Rebbe, where, you know, there are deep sources of these ideas. It explains that the Avod, the patriarchs, himshichu rak me'olam ha'atzilut, they were able to draw a radiance which came from the world of Atzilut, the world of emanation, which is extremely exalted. The ilu al yedei matan Torah, but through the giving of the Torah, nimshach mibchina shel amayla mishtal shelu, one is able to draw down from a much more exalted level, higher than the whole system of down chaining of the sfirot and of the world. Bechinat lo adam, the quality of not a man, not with the form of a man, like the sfirot, in a sense, they have a kind of a form, like chesed is on the right, gvura, the kindness is on the right, gvura is on the left, and so on. But this is from a level which is completely beyond that. And so, in other words, as explained also in this discourse itself, says the Rebbe, the one he's quoting by the Tzemach Tzedek, or the Tzemach Tzedek's comments on Rabbi Shneur Zalman, that the main concept of the giving of the Torah is to draw into the Torah, which is called Adam, right? There's a verse, Zosatara Adam. This is the Torah. And then it says a man. And it goes on with a verse saying something about this man. But the Kabbalists take this as Torah and man have a certain identity together. And so that is a aspect of the Torah where we can see it as man, so to speak, as relating to this world. And the thing is that into that dimension of Torah should be drawn Me'ein Sof Baruch Hu, from the infinite beyond Mamash, the ultimate infinite. And so, in other words, the Torah is a process whereby that which is exaltedly beyond can flow into the Torah and be revealed there. And that also explains V'zeh Gamash Inyana Torah Hu Gilu Ratzon HaElyon Mamash. That's why the revelation of Torah is the revelation of God's will. Shezel bechinat haratzon pashut shelamayla maaseichum. That is the revelation of the pure will which is higher than intellect. V'al derech shematzinu benogeh l'Rabbi Akiva. Now here we come to a very difficult passage. And it's difficult because it surpasses our intellect. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Amar. Now here, this is a quotation from Tractate Menachot, from the Talmud. And it tells us, it's also about Mount Sinai, that Moses, when he was on Mount Sinai, was able to see all future leaders and teachers of the Jewish people, generation by generation. And he saw Rabbi Akiva. And he was absolutely amazed by Rabbi Akiva. He saw Rabbi Akiva teaching in a wonderful way. The Talmud describes Moses on Mount Sinai was somehow able to travel through time and step into the study hall where Rabbi Akiva was teaching. And he was absolutely bowled over by what Rabbi Akiva was doing. It was incredible. And he said to God, God, if you've got such a wonderful person, why are you giving the Torah through me, Moses? He would be a much more worthy person to give the Torah. So God answered him, stop, be silent. Thus it arose in my thought. So then Moses says, you've shown me this great man who had such a wonderful life. Show me how he passed away from the world. I'm sure that was a very beautiful spiritual event where his soul left this world. Well, actually, it was the time of the Hadrianic persecution. And the Romans had decreed that no one was allowed to teach Torah in public. And Rabbi Akiva insisted on teaching Torah in public. And he was arrested. And he was tortured to death in a most horrific way. And so this is now revealed to Moses, the way in which Rabbi Akiva is being tortured to death. And Moses said to God, is this Torah and the reward for Torah? How can you do this to him? He's such a great Torah sage, and you're allowing him to be tortured to death. So God said to him, Stok, be silent. Kach alab machashava. That's how it arose in my thought. In other words, the same reply. Now, so therefore we have Rabbi Akiva who exemplifies Torah teaching. And there's this paradox. And there's no way to grapple with the paradox. Simply stok, be silent. Thus it arose in God's thought. Now, this whole thing, this whole story about Rabbi Akiva is something which transcends rationality. Just as Moses asks, is this Torah and is this its reward? And it means that this is something which cannot be grasped at all in the mind. So in other words, now what the Rebbe is doing here he's transferring the paradox of Rabbi Akiva's death, like the contrast between his life and his death. That paradox is really the paradox of Torah. Rabbi Akiva exemplifies Torah. And precisely that is the thing about Torah. Torah comes from a realm beyond rationality. V'zeu hachidush matan Torah. Now, this is the remarkable thing, the new thing about the giving of the Torah at Sinai. Shegam inyan shalamayla ma'asecha legamri, that also something that is completely beyond rationality, nimshach lamata, can come down below b'seich la'adam, into the mind of a man and a woman, and that we are able to study Torah and learn it and understand it with our mind, which is an incredible concept. So in other words, the story of Rabbi Akiva expresses the deep hidden nature of Torah beyond all existence and beyond rationality. And the miracle, the remarkable thing about the giving of the Torah, is that the Torah comes down in laws and ideas and teachings that we are able to discuss, we're able to understand and compare and see similarities and structures. And there are these are the 39 principles of work that's forbidden on Shabbat. We can categorize things. So it comes down and fits into our rational mind. Now, umuvan, it's understood that the chidush of Matan Torah, the new thing about Matan Torah, according to this third way, includes also the two ways of understanding it before. In other words, once Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, draws down a level which is higher than the downchaining of worlds, as explained in the third part, and it's through every, and it's by means of every single individual Jewish man and woman, as the first part, and it's in such a way that it comes right down below in this physical world as the second part. So here, in a beautiful way, the Rebbe has taken these three ideas about the significance of the giving of the Torah, and he's put them all together. So then, we have a new stage, but before we come to that new stage, let me just stop for a moment and see if everyone is still on the train, so to speak. It's going, the discourse is going step by step. Hi, Nicole, lovely to see you. So we've got this fascinating way of depicting the power of the giving of the Torah. And now we have another question, which is asked by the Tzemach Tzedek. Umamshech b'mayna, and the discourse continues. Ach meheichen yizke lezeh adam. From where can a person achieve all this? What it's saying is, it's an amazing thing that the giving of the Torah is achieving something tremendous for each one of us. How can we achieve this? Shebe'emet, in truth, hu hashafel shebechol abriyot. Man is the lowest of all creatures. Very interesting way of putting it. As the Talmud says, why is man created on Erev Shabbat? That's Friday, the sixth day. So that if a person becomes boastful, then we can say to the person, you know what? Yatush kodmoch b'maisa bereshit. A mosquito comes before you in the creation of the world. You are the last of the created beings, and everything else is before you, so they're all higher. So in other words, if we're so low, how can we possibly have this power to reveal the divine in this incredible way that's being described through the giving of the Torah? So line 24. The thing is as follows. Someone who is on the lowest level, it's particularly because we're on that lowest level, we can climb higher. Because being on the lowest level shows that we have a very exalted root. And therefore, we're able to go to such a low level down. So it's true, man is on a very low level. One way of understanding that is we, different to all other creatures in existence, we have an evil desire. Everything else does what God told it to do. The insect, the tree, the plant, the tiger, they're all doing what God has implanted, the spider, whatever God has implanted in them, that's what they do. We are the ones who have got free will and we've got an evil desire and we're able to do the very opposite of what we're supposed to do. And in that sense as well, we can be seen as the lowest bit of creation. But that is because we have a very exalted source. And it's because of this, and this is the great significance of us confronting the concealment, which is below at the lowest level of existence, as the discourse explained, that for velichvodi barativ, I've created it for my honor. And what does it mean, my honor? It means the garment, that this is something concealment. God conceals himself within the worlds, and the world has got the same letters as the word helem, concealment. And so God is completely concealed in the worlds that he's created. And that's the whole purpose of creation. Because everything that God created, he only did for his own glory. In other words, in order that we should have the avodah, the service, to sift through the concealment and to reveal godliness here below. So in other words, indeed, we are in a situation, we're in a very low situation, in order that we should be able to grapple with the darkness and reveal the divine within it. And so now we can go back to the very beginning and we can consider these two interpretations of the thick cloud. Is the thick cloud the very lowest level or is it the very highest level? And so therefore, through line 15, through sifting the concealment of this world, we reach that, and that's the lowest level, we reach the upper concealment of the essence, which is where the name Elohim is there because it is talking about the concealment of the essence. So in other words, here we're putting together the idea of the lowest dimension of concealment and thick cloud relating to the highest dimension, which is thick cloud because we are just at the essence of the divine. Now we then come to this idea that it's not just Moses, but it applies to every person. So this idea of going into the cloud where the godliness is hidden, that relates to every person. And even though the verse seems to make a distinction between the people and Moses, it says the people stood far off and Moses alone came close into the thick cloud. Now, the people themselves have a relationship with this thick cloud, because when it says they stood far off, it shows they've got a connection. They're far off from it. If they didn't have any connection, it wouldn't mention them. It wouldn't mention that they are standing far off. The fact that it says that means the people as a whole, we have some kind of connection to this thick cloud. And a further point, that when it says the people stood, now going into the verse, Ve'yamod ha'am merachok, the people stood from far away, u'moshe nigash el ha'arafel, and Moses came close into the thick cloud. Now that seems to imply, shebetchila at the beginning, hine gam Moshe amad yachad im kol b'nei Yisrael merachok. At the beginning, Moses stood with the whole people far off. And afterwards, the next step is, Moses steps forward into the thick cloud and the other people stood where they were. So that means the distance is a place from which Moses, at least, can reach the thick cloud. And so that means it's a place where there is a connection with this thick cloud. And you can even look at it that the place far off is a preparation for coming to the thick cloud. And then we have the idea that Moses went into the thick cloud. He transferred that power to the whole Jewish people. Gam le'elu shehem b'mechinat am, even to people who are called am. Now, am means people. So if you look in the dictionary, what does am mean? It means nation, people. But am can also be understood as relating to the word omamut or omamot. Omamut means dal, like there are coals, which are bright coals burning with flames. Then there are red hot coals, and you can see that they're red hot. And then there's coals which are dull, and you can't see the flame at all. They look dark. They look just like a dead piece of coal, a cold piece of coal. But actually, there's the heat inside. So even such a person, where you can't see the radiance, the fire at all, that person has got a connection with the path of Moses going into the thick cloud and reaching the essence of the divine. And further, we learn in Tanya about the concept of awe. It says there's a verse in the Torah where Moses said, all that God wants from you is that you should fear God. So the Talmud comments on this. And so all that God wants from you is such a little thing that Moses seems to think. It's a very little thing for people to fear God. Fearing God is a deep spiritual emotion. Is it so easy? And the Talmud answers, you know what? For Moses, it's easy. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman in Tanya says, what does it help? How does it answer the question to say that for Moses, it's easy? If Moses says to the people, all God is asking from you is to fear God, and the Talmud says, well, for Moses, it's an easy thing. So how does that help in relation to the people? So Tanya gives the beautiful explanation that inside each Jew, there's a little Moses. There's a Moses hidden inside each Jew. Because kikol, and that's what's being quoted here, kikol nefesh for nefesh mibet Yisrael, every single soul of the Jewish people, yesh ba mibchinat Moshe Rabbeinu, has within it a quality of Moses, alav shalom, and further, in every generation, sparks of the soul of Moses come down into the body and the being and the soul of the Chachmei Hador, the sages of the generation, the eyes of the community, so that they are like the Moses of the time, teaching wisdom to the people. And now we come to an exposition of Moses and the Torah. Now, what this means is, this is in section Hay, and in our pages here, it's page 19. Now, the thing is as follows. Moshe's inyan is Torah. As we know, Moses received the Torah at Sinai, he gave it to Joshua, and from Joshua to the elders, and then to the prophets, and eventually it came to the whole Jewish people. And the Torah is called Torah Moshe Avdi, the Torah of Moses, myself. Similarly, for that quality of Moses that is inside every individual Jew, it's that quality of learning Torah. We've all got some kind of connection with the study of Torah. And it's through the Moshe inside ourselves that the radiance of Torah reaches the people, the uninspired part of one's soul. The same way that from Moses, the Torah spreads to the entire Jewish people, right down to the lowest person, that they also have a connection with. How do you keep this? How do you do that? How do you put a mezuzah on the door? Whatever it is which relates to every single individual. So inside each person, we have got different aspects. There's the inspired part of ourselves, the Moses, and then we have all the other parts. And that means that the study of Torah gives power and life to all aspects of service, whether in the service of prayer, or whether in keeping mitzvot, or the special service that in all your pathways you should know God. And in this, there has to be, in all this, there has to be the idea of Moses coming into the thick cloud. That thick cloud, which is also the highest level of thick cloud, the simple will of the divine, which is beyond any kind of rational understanding, should come down into our Torah study, like we're doing this second, with our Havanava Hasaga, with our understanding. And that's really the whole idea of learning Hasidic teachings. That the things which are such exalted levels, secrets of secrets, which are beyond understanding, really, they come down in such a way that we actually can grasp them, as the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, said, that learning Torah of Hasidut should be in such a way, the same way when people study Talmud, they learn it in an analytic way, trying to understand this opinion, that opinion. So too, our learning of the inwardness of Torah should have the same quality, which is precisely what we have in this kind of discourse, this kind of analytical approach. And that's also the idea that the study of Torah should be with a sense of Yirat Shamayim, awe of heaven. Awe of heaven, not only when we learn the written Torah, where the holiness of every word is emphasized over and above the actual understanding of the word, but even when we're learning the oral Torah, which really that has to be learned with understanding, like the Mishnah, the Talmud. Now, because even though understanding is connected with a kind of a spreading out, and awe is something where one draws in, nonetheless, we have to have the learning with understanding and awe at the same time, right? Always the paradoxical approach in Chabad, having both dimensions at the same time, both the understanding and the awe. I remember a beautiful phrase I once heard from an old Hasid called Rabbi Ushpal. He said, what is Chabad? It is a flaming fire with a cold spring in the middle. And the cold spring is like the awe, and the flaming fire is like the love, and in this case, the understanding. And not only that the awe should not disturb the understanding, but in fact, through the awe, one understands better. And that's what it means. Moshe comes into the thick cloud because he is reaching the will of the divine higher than intellect, and that comes down to Moshe, into the Torah, which Moses teaches, both the written Torah and the oral Torah. And that's this idea of be silent, thus it arose in my thought, concerns Rabbi Akiva, because our sages tell us that all our understanding of Torah is actually according to Rabbi Akiva. There was a time when all these sages passed away, and only five students were left. And those five students, they are the basis of the way in which we understand Torah today. But all those five students, actually, they are trying to, each one is expressing his opinion of the view of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva is the source of the entire oral Torah. And the concept of the oral Torah is understanding. But at the same time, we have the story about Rabbi Akiva where God says, be silent. Thus it arose in my thought. So that is expressing the ultimate divine will, which doesn't fit into seichel, into rationality at all. And it's irrational. It's beyond. And that's because in the understanding of our study of Torah, the oral Torah, we have to draw down that pure will, that pure divine will, which is completely beyond any kind of rationality and understanding. Well, thank you for joining me in exploring this discourse, which I believe is something very, very special. Now, I want to share with you a new venture that I'm trying to launch. We, the Aleph Group, not everyone who is in the Aleph Group at this moment and on the screen, but some of us, including Nicole, our hostess for many, many, many years, we've been studying for a long time together. And I think it was about 6 years ago, I began trying occasionally to write a summary of the discourse that we had learned together. And then I looked recently at these summaries. See here, I have some. I have this file. So this is a file of discourses for the book of Shemot, Exodus. And there are five such files, and they have in them about over 150 discourses, which have been summarized like in 1.5 pages or 2 pages, sometimes a little bit more in English. So what I'm proposing is to edit these every 3 weeks, maybe taking one and sending it round on a mailing list. So I'm going to be building a mailing list. So I have this discourse that we've just studied. We also studied in 2016. And that's when I wrote a kind of summary of it. And I'm going to be evaluating that summary now, especially since we've learned together now, and trying to see if the summary, I mean, a summary never does justice, but maybe it's useful. And so I'm going to be editing those and sending them around. And if anyone would like to be, so I'm going to be building a new mailing list. So of course, the summary is really the bare bones of the argument. It doesn't have all the extra bits of discussion but explanation. It's put in a very simple way. But if anyone feels that that would be useful for you, let me know by email and I'll put you on that email list. So you'll be getting an email it's called the Rebbe's Discourses. You see, I publish a thing called Friday Night and a thing called Young Friday Night for young people, children, or young teenagers. And there's also the Rebbe's Discourses now, hopefully. So that's a kind of a new venture. And you, of course, are the first that I mention it to in this way, because you are the ones who study these discourses with me and help me understand them. And Rabbi Lu will also be looking at the discourse to try and see that it's more or less faithful to the original, even though it's going to be very brief and leaving out a lot of the discussion. So just as my book about Hasidism, Hasidism Beyond Modernity, was very much a creation of my students at UCL, who I taught over many years a course called Hasidism and Modernity. You are the Aleph Group who have helped me in writing these little summaries of the Rebbe's discourses. So I hope to share them with you. And if you would like to receive them when they come out, you'll let me know. So all the very best to everyone.
I look forward to reading them.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward.